Grace, mercy, and peace be unto you from the Lord our God and from our Heavenly Father. On this special day, a day when we're going to dedicate a lot of improvements here at the chapel, it seems that we should rejoice not only in the things that we have, but in the value that God places upon us. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but have you ever had an experience where you keep saying or doing the same thing and people don't get it? Ever felt like just hitting your head against the wall? I am surprised that Jesus does not hit his head against the wall. Because the last two chapters of Luke's gospel, we have heard Jesus over and over and over and over again trying to explain to the Sadducees and the Pharisees the heart of a God who wants to seek and save the lost. The heart of God that loves the people who we think are unlovable. A God who is willing to do whatever it takes to reach out and to save the people for whom he was about to die. Jesus tries over and over again to help the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the teachers of the law, the religious rulers, to understand that God's value system is different than the value system they've embraced. And yet, no matter how he tries, no matter what parables he gives, no matter what he does, do they hear it? Do they change their attitude? Remember, we had the reading from the gospel in chapter 14 where he was standing there and are sitting at this Pharisee's house, and people were coming and they were kind of rallying for the best positions to show how righteous they were. They wanted to get closer to the host, who was a righteous man. So they were trying to prove that they were worthy. And he said, don't sit in the place of the righteous. Sit at the lower place and then have your host welcome you to the higher place. Don't assume it. And he's trying over and over and over again to impress upon the rulers of the people that God's way of looking at things is different than theirs. And yet, the problem in this particular gospel lesson, and the hint on, if you have the outline, the hint is, it's in verse 2. What's the problem with what's happening? First of all, you would expect that when Jesus is speaking to people and showing God's love and telling them the truth of who God is and telling them about the Father's heart, that there would be people who would be drawn to him, right? So the gospel lesson starts out, find my stuff here. The gospel lesson starts out, now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear him. So what is this like? Well, this is like you guys come to church next Sunday, and there's 150 people who've never been in church before taking your spots. You're all going, never happen. Everybody's so happy. But this is what was happening. Happened at the Pharisee's house. Happened throughout his ministry. People are coming in who don't belong. And they're taking the righteous people's place. And they're getting a little bit upset about this. You see? What does it say? And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled. These are grown men. Can you just hear them? Now, I have served in a Lutheran church for 25 years. That's why we're going on the cruise, because 25 years. 25. And I have seen many people, veins in their forehead bulging because someone has sat in their seat. Matter of fact, in my first parish, we were doing so hard to reach out to the community. And one time, this man who's just grown immensely and is a wonderful Christian man, his name was Ed. Ed was a single guy. He always sat in the same place his dad had sat for 40-some years, okay? I was in the same place. And we were reaching out to to the community, and we and to me it was tremendous because we had the high school coach, which is a big win, okay? Like big win. High school coach shows up, comes into church, and has, unbeknownst to him, the audacity to sit in Ed's pew. Well, I was getting ready for church, and I was getting stuff prepared for the service, and I looked out, and I noticed Ed walking like this and just stopping in the middle of the aisle. Had the most profound look on his face. You see the wheels turning. There's somebody in my pew. I didn't know what was going to happen. So much so that I dropped everything and I went running down the aisle and I said, Ed, can I talk to you? And I took him down. We had a bunch of stairs. I took him downstairs and I said to him, I said, Ed, is it okay if these folks are in your pew? Because you know what? We've been wanting to invite people into church and they don't know where they were sitting, you know. Just came in and sat in the place that was most comfortable. And you know, would it be okay? Because I have already been through this a few times. Would it be okay if they sit in your pew? I didn't try to go through the whole argument that it's not your pew and blah, 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 because that wouldn't have worked. I simply said, would it be okay if they sit in your pew? And I'll never forget the look on his face when I said, you know, this makes Jesus glad. And I saw what would be probably the closest to a smile that I would see for a long time. And he even went so far as to invite them out for lunch. It's pretty profound. But that's exactly what's happening with the people here. They're grumbling because someone is taking their place. And they don't belong. I mean, we learned this on Sesame Street. Some things don't belong, right? We have this idea. And so here, the Pharisees and Sadducees are grumbling. Why? They're not being honest about the fact that they're being usurped and their places are being taken. No, they make it sound more noble. This man receives sinners. And that'd be bad enough. Just so you understand. From a Pharisee perspective, the fact that he receives them, we were talking about this morning in Bible study. There's a difference between being open to something, it's like leaving your door unlocked. There's another thing that's way different than inviting and receiving. Receiving and inviting is basically, you know, if someone said, I'm coming over, and you said, well, the door's unlocked. That's like, okay, well, you know, if you want to come in, fine. But to receive is to welcome them to come and open the door, invite them in for coffee. That's receiving. The Lord wasn't just tolerating them. He was receiving them. You see the difference? How many of us say, well, you know, we're open to what the Lord wants to do. No, you're not open to the Lord? No. Yeah, we're open to the Lord wants to do, but, you know, we just still want to have control. We still want to have control. We still want to manage things our way. And so we're open, but we're not really inviting. We're not really receiving. We're not quite there yet. We like God to just kind of tell us, okay, this is, you know, we like to have him come alongside of us, but we're not really ready to let him have the throne. And so when it's when Jesus is receiving these people, receiving sinners, he's welcoming them. He's embracing them. He's letting them in. He's letting them take the spots of honor. This is something unheard of. And then, to top it all off, one of the biggest things that you can do to show someone they have value or worth is allow them to eat with you. In our culture today, we've gotten so far away from this. There was an article in the paper, and yes, there is still papers, and yes, I still read them. Somebody asked me that the other day. There's an article in the paper that most American families sit at the table. If they sit at a table, it's in silence because they all have their own gadgets. So we've kind of lost that maybe in our culture, but to eat together was extremely important. To eat together was to welcome someone into your home. It was the biggest part of hospitality. And for Jesus to not only receive them, which means to welcome them, but to eat with them, was an horrific offense to the righteous people. Because they were the ones who deserved to be at the table, right? They are the ones who belonged. They are the ones who were doing the right things. They were the ones who deserved to be in the place of honor. They were the ones who Jesus should have received. And yet, I don't think it was that Jesus didn't want to receive them. It was that he had been teaching them over and over and over again that the first will be last, the last shall be first, and they weren't getting it. How many of us have noticed that sometimes we don't learn that easily? Takes multiple times. So then he tells this parable. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I'm sure you've heard these before. Every time we have a baptism, I love to remind us of this parable. It says, What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost. Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. I want to ask you, who among those people that were grumbling were righteous? Again, if they had been listening, but how many of you think that the Pharisees who were listening thought they were part of the 99? I bet you the majority of them thought they were part of the 99, so this parable really didn't kind of do it for them. But this is hearkening back to the Old Testament lesson where God says he's going to seek out the lost. He's going to go find them. If we have the proper attitude and humility before God, we recognize we're all lost without him, right? We're all lost without him. That's why we have great joy in forgiveness. That's why we have great joy in salvation, because we recognize it's nothing we do, it's everything that he does. Just like we're that sheep that is found and we're placed on his shoulders, and he invites everybody to rejoice with him. Then he tells this next parable, which kind of interesting because, first of all, to the Pharisees, sheep were of great value. Why? Anybody know? Why were sheep of such great value to the Pharisees and to the scribes? Sacrifices. The majority of them were in Jerusalem, and what did they need to sacrifice? Sheep. So there's value there. So they would understand this. They would be doing this calculation in their head, 99 versus 1. I would ask the children, what do you think? Would you think that 99 have greater value than 1? What would they say? Yeah, duh. 99 definitely have more value than 1. But in God's vision, everyone has great value, so much so that he gives the same value to the person who's lost as the person who's not. Because without him, everyone's lost. That makes sense? So then he goes on to talk about this, and I think it's because maybe he didn't catch them with the sheep. And they didn't quite get it. So if they weren't motivated by sheep, maybe they would be motivated by the whole idea of money. Because this is also important to them, because if you didn't have sheep when you came to the temple, they were the ones that Jesus chased out because they would take your money and replace it with a sheep or a dove. So you could do your sacrifice, right? So that's why the money collectors were there, and they would always charge a fee, and that was what Jesus was upset about. It wasn't that there was not fair exchange, it was because they were adding things to it. He's very upset about that. So, or what woman having 10 silver coins? Now, silver coins were of great value, more than the dollar that I showed here today. Silver coins were of great value. Having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it. Now, what's important here that we might miss if we don't understand the culture again is that this coin has, number one, great value. It might have even been, so some suggest in commentaries, that because it's a silver coin, it might have been part of her dowry. It might have been something that was given to her and of great value to her as an individual and as a wife. And so it was like a keepsake, more than just something you would use for your everyday living. So much so that she lights a lamp, which costs her money. Lighting a lamp is not inexpensive. As a matter of fact, most people didn't light lamps because you had to pay for the oil, and the oil cost money. And so for her, it was She lost this coin, which was hers, and she actually takes money and time and energy and everything else to find it. What he's trying to impress upon the Pharisees is that what he is doing in receiving them is easy compared to what he's going to have to do on the cross to save them. Right? It's much easier to receive them than what he's going to have to do in order to save them. And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost. Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Brothers and sisters, it's so important that we understand the value that God places on us. And I'm going to close with this. This is a thing I found on the internet, or I put on Facebook, because I think this is how come Jesus used these two examples. He's going to go on next week, and you probably might hear from Brian, who's sharing next week, about the prodigal son, because that's the gospel lesson. Because he goes on to say, if you don't understand the value of sheep, if you don't understand the value of a coin, then maybe you'll understand the value of a son. So we're going to hear that next week. But this is what I thought was it. It says, people were created to be loved. Things were created to be used. The reason why the world is in chaos is because things are being loved and people are being used. You want to hear that again? Maybe a good reminder. People were created to be loved. Things were created to be used. The reason why the world is in so much chaos is because things are being loved and people are being used. Profound, right? Kind of hit me right here. I thought, wow. God designed us because he wants us to be loved by him. He designed us so that we would be in relationship with him. He designed us so that we would spend time with him in prayer. We spend time with him in the word. We spend time with the fellowship of believers. He designed us to be in common unity and community with him. He designed us to be in relationship. He wants that relationship, and he was willing to die for it. So please, brothers and sisters, recognize that to the people that Jesus was speaking, the sinners did not have value. But Jesus explained that one sheep was worth more than 99, one coin worth more than the nine that she already had. The value is to God is different than the value to us. So my question is, how do we assign value to things? Is it how much we can use them? And do we then, therefore, do that to people? Or do we see their innate value that is placed upon them by God, that if they were the only person on the planet, he would have died for them because that's how much they're worth? That's their value. And then the next question and the final question of today is, how do we show value? How do we? I don't want you to answer now, but I'd like you to meditate on it this week, is how do we show value? Do we show value based upon the value or worth that we see in the world from the world's perspective? Or do we place value based upon God's perspective? Because if we place value based upon God's perspective, it will change how we act, right? It'll change what we do. That's my challenge. I'm going to be gone for a few weeks, but I'll be praying for you. Is that you think? Just think on that. How do we assign value, and how do we show value? Amen.